So thank you all for coming out to tonight's pre-Purim shiur. I'd like to talk about the custom that we have to dress up on Purim. It's a custom that we all look at as a central part of Purim, but interestingly may not have always been that way. Certainly wasn't always that way, certainly not since the times of Esther and Mordechai, as it seems. But there's actually a whole lot of discussion and a whole lot of literature on this topic, both in terms of the reason that we do this, the background of why we do this, and various halachot, various different details of the law that may apply to dressing up on Purim that we may never even have thought of. So let's give a little bit of background here. The most famous source where this practice is cited is in the Ramah. The Ramah, of course, is the really what was the first commentary, but really a book written alongside the Shulchan Aruch, okay, and his commentary called the Mapa to Shulchan Aruch in Orach Chaim 696-8. Ramah writes the following: Ma shenahagu lilbosh partzufim bifurim, this that people have the custom of wearing partzufim, okay? Partzufim will translate as masks, but other commentaries later on will sometimes translate it slightly differently. They'll sometimes use it to mean, literally it means faces. We should make that clear, thank you. But they'll sometimes use it to mean costume overall, not necessarily faces, or not necessarily masks. So this that they have the custom of wearing masks on Purim, v'gever lovesh simlat isha, v'ishach legever, and that men will wear women's clothing, women will wear men's clothing, says the Rama, ein isur badavar. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Why is there nothing wrong with that? And if you want to hear more about this, you'll have to wait till the end of the shiur. But he says, me'achar she'ein mechavnim ela l'simcha be'alma. Since people are only intending to rejoice, to have fun, to celebrate the holiday, so there's nothing wrong with cross-dressing, there's nothing wrong with wearing these masks, it's okay. V'chein bil vishas kilayim d'rabanan. The Rama says something even more shocking. He says, even if people want to wear shatnez, shatnez which is only rabbinically not allowed, but he says, even if you want to do that, totally fine. That's also permitted. However, the Rama notes that this is not universal. V'yesh omrim, and some say, di'asur, that this is prohibited. Aval ha-minhag kisvara ha-rishona. But our custom is to follow the first opinion, which is that all of these activities that we do on Purim are actually okay, they're fine. And this is the Rama. Now, the Rama bases himself off an earlier source that we have in source number 2. There are source sheets when you come in, as well as on the Bima, which is the Tshuvot Mahari Mintz. Mahari Mintz was a 15th century authority who lived in Italy. And he's actually the one who brings this up. We can read the English over here, because he talks about what an important custom this was in his community at that time. So question, regarding wearing costumes that young men and ladies, old men and children, right, and children, bachorim v'gam betulot, zkenim v'nearim, are accustomed to wear on Purim. And he says, response, but I have come to claim small reward like a splinter from a board, you have to love these old phrases, of the commandment to provide a reason and bring proof for what they saw fit to do concerning the matter. And he's now going to talk about how in his community it's so accepted. The great and pious ones, among whom I grew up, who saw their sons and daughters, sons-in-law and daughters-in-law, wearing costumes and changing their dress from male clothing to female clothing and vice versa. If, God forbid, their actions constituted even a hint of sin, it would have been a disgrace for them to remain silent and not protest their behavior. And how much more so if they were actually violating some sort of prohibition? Rather, certainly they had proof and a basis that is completely permissible, and wearing this clothing, meaning cross-dressing, incorporates not even a thought of sin. Okay, so at this point, he actually elaborates a lot more beyond this to go through the halachic details, which we're not going to focus on. Now we're going to focus on those a little bit later. But this was something that was so accepted, and he says, it can't be that there's anything wrong with this. This is in the 15th century. There are a couple of, or maybe even one, slightly earlier sources. It's found this idea that people were cross-dressing on Purim and masquerading in some fashion on Purim is brought in one slightly earlier source in a piyut from about a century earlier. But this is sort of the main source where we see this being expressed and where we really get the ideas from. The Rama, and he is quoting the Mahari Mintz. So first of all, the first thing I wanted to explore is, why is it that we dress up on Purim? It's very nice that the Rama says that people did this, but what's the rationale for that, and how is there a connection to Purim? We know there are other mitzvot that we're given on Purim, Mishloach, Manos, Mikra, Megillah, that's all good and dandy, but where does the dressing up come from? Yes?
Perhaps Nahafochu.
Okay.
And perhaps, I just had it, Hester.
Okay, so you could be giving the shir here. We're gonna touch on both of those reasons, among others. But yes, those are certainly both central themes to Purim that may be expressed somehow by dressing up. And I think that's, you know, sort of a bigger picture look at things. Sometimes people tend to say, I want to find some little tiny detail of Purim that I can tie this idea in here. And we will see certain details of Purim that people do tie in this practice to. But other people are sort of bigger picture. What's the bigger picture? God being hidden. Okay, maybe we dress up to be hidden. Turning things around. Maybe we want to sort of dress like people that we aren't. And so, yes, both of those are definitely true. I think the first explanation that I bring here, though, from Rabbi Arya Leibowitz, in a short shir on this, is 10-minute halacha shir on Purim costumes, is, you know, has a lot of truth to it. The first explanation is that it's just fun. It helps add to the general atmosphere of the day. Dressing up in costumes, it's what you do when you party. And if that's the case, this is something that I'd like to keep in mind when we're going to have a lot of the discussions of the true source of this minhag, and what people may think it is. Yes?
So if joy is the objective, if we have a holiday where, like, Sukkot, where it's Samachta v'Chagecha, why should we do it then too? If it's joy-driven.
So there were, in fact, many joyous practices that did happen on Sukkot. One of them that the Rama mentions after this, it's not in this portion that I cited here in source number one, but he actually talks about how people would snatch things from one another as like a joke, sort of playful stealing, and he says you can actually take someone else's food and just snatch it and eat it, and everybody's okay with that. And that actually comes from a Mishnah in Masechet Sukkah, according to some interpretations, as something they would do on Sukkot. We had talked about people at the Simchat Beit HaShoeva juggling fire. So there were things that were like this. You know, this could have been something that crept in later because people decided that was a fun thing to do on Purim. So it's definitely not so crazy to say that they would do this for that reason alone. But realizing that there's obviously more to it than just this is a fun thing to do, obviously this will require a very, very significant explanation as to how we can put aside some of these isurim, some of these prohibitions which the Rama mentioned, right? The Rama talks about wearing shatnez, which is rabbinically prohibited, not that shatnez is rabbinically prohibited, but biblically prohibited, rabbinically prohibited shatnez, but shatnez itself, there is biblical shatnez. And also the idea of cross-dressing. So that is certainly not enough on its own. The Sefer HaTodah by Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov, that actually has a whole section on this, and he has what are either two or three different reasons here. And he begins, Lefichach mitchapsim bevigdei arelim, kedei shelo yakiru ben Haman leMordechai, ulkayem mitzvat chachamim ad delo yada. He points out that there is this idea that people are supposed to drink on Purim, and for this please consult your local rabbi as to what you should be doing for the drinking part of things, but there's this idea that we want to lose track of the difference between Mordechai and Haman. It says, the Sefer HaTodah, what better way than to have people dress up? V'cheinu eino yodea lehavchin bein ha-mechupasim ladat mihuzeh v'ulai bemet eino Yehudi. You see someone wearing a giant bear costume. Are they Jewish or are they not Jewish? This is the true ad de lo yada. Everybody's dressed up in different costumes. Jews are dressed up as Haman. Non-Jews are probably not dressed up as Mordechai, but, you know, you get the idea to say that this is almost a kiyum of ad de lo yada. Okay, and that's his first take. And I think it somewhat continues into what some people may consider his second reason. I split it up in terms of the translation here, but I'm not sure that it's a different reason. He says, leharot, shekol ma sheYisrael chot'imu mitdamim leumot haolam, that all that the Jews sin and make themselves similar to the nations of the world, eino ela lefanim, it's only on the outside, it's only sort of an exterior sort of sin. Uchshem shem chupasim ele hadomim la'arelim inam ela yireim ushlemim am Hashem, or im Hashem. It can be read both ways here. And I translated it as with God, I believe, if you look in the translation. Yep, wholesome with God in their hearts. So since these people who are dressed up and they look like, you know, the biggest shegets, and really it's a God-fearing Jew, it's a Hasidish Rebbe who's dressed up like a shegets. So he says, you know, what better way to show that same message that this was really only external, but internally we remained the same. Right? So too, the Jews of that generation were totally, again, you know, wholesome with God in their hearts. And again, they only bowed down to Nebuchadnezzar's idol, to the idol of him, and that was sort of something external. They may have bowed down, but of course they didn't really believe it. They didn't really worship him. And he brings the Gemara to prove this, which we're going to just skip for now. But this is exactly how the Gemara takes it in Megillah 12a. And he says, so therefore, we're showing, by not being able to differentiate Ben Arhaman Levarach Mordechai, and by our dressing up, we are showing that this is an outside change, but inside we remain the very same people, devoted and loyal to God. And that's what I would consider sort of his first reason. Maybe, again, if you want to say the Adda Lo Yada is a second reason, then that's his second reason. But certainly, again, a bigger picture food for thought, that we always remain loyal inside, even if sometimes on the outside we have to act like non-Jews or work within a certain framework, just like Esther did. Right? Esther was in the palace. She had to be alongside Ahasuerus at all times. And this is a story that took place over years. Right? This is not... Sometimes we tend to think of the Purim story as like a five-minute episode. This was not... This was a really long time that everything took place. And as a result, this is one way of looking at the general theme of Purim and saying, here's a reason why we should dress up based on that. He has one more reason, which is the one that you mentioned, which is this idea of Vanochi Haster Astir Panai Bayom Hahu. And he says this is, there's a famous drasha in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us, Esther min HaTorah minayin, where can Esther be found in the written Torah? Where can there be a hint to Esther? And this is on the second side of the first page, it's on page 2. It's the first Hebrew and the English translation that's there, just above source 5. And where is Esther found in the Torah? It says, "Be'anochi haster astir panai b'yom hu." God says, "I will hide my face." And this is a hint, as he says, "Mikan remez lehastarat panim b'yom Esther," to face covering on the day of Esther. Haster astir. So just as God says he will cover his face, so to say, and be hidden, so too we cover our faces with masks. And this is a cute way to look at it again, but it also ties into the bigger story of the Megillah, of God not being so visible and being behind his mask, so to say, and therefore we too wear masks and obscure our own faces on the holiday of Purim. So these are sort of, again, the approaches of the Sefer HaTodah. Ohev Yisrael in source number 5, and I'm going to keep us going in case some of the nitty-gritty later takes us a little bit longer. He talks about the joy that we have when we see other people wearing clothing they don't usually wear. It causes so much laughter. Why? Because it's so unusual. My gosh, I can't believe Ezra is wearing an elephant costume. Right? So that's sort of the approach that people have. And why? He says, normally, you know, there's no happiness when you see someone as they are. He says, if you see a non-Jew every other day of the year, so you see it's a non-Jew. But if you see a Jew dressed as a non-Jew on Purim, it brings happiness. Why? Because it's the reverse. It's the flip side. Joy came through, v'nahafochu asher yish l'tu ha-yehudim him avesoneihem. And this was the miracle of Purim, that everything was reversed, and therefore so too here, even though normally there's nothing special about seeing these people, now on Purim where we're reversing it, and we're going to make a happiness out of that, that's too a reason why we dress up. Yes?
It's going too far for males to dress up as Esther and females to dress up as Mordechai.
So that's still an issue that we're going to be addressing. He actually thinks that that's part of it. He actually would say this is part of the, because v'nahafochu, normally you wouldn't have a male dressing up as a female and a female dressing up as a male, so let's add that onto it. So according to him, it's even more part and parcel of the minhag for there actually to be some element of cross-dressing. Sorry? Okay.
Maybe after this class it will be.
I was going to say, okay, we'll have to see the last page. You'll have to see the last page. I spoke to Rick Korobkin today to see practically what he recommends for certain halachot. So we'll definitely get a chance to talk about that. And that's why I really don't want to get too caught up on the first part. But yes, For other reasons, it may be more concerning why there's cross-dressing than for a reason like this, where we're emphasizing the turnaround nature of the holiday of Purim, and that as an element of why we dress up. One other one that I brought here, which I thought was really, you know, thoughtful, but less of a macro point and more of a micro point. A number of sources I saw suggested this, but nowhere from a name that I really knew. And I had this nice, from Chabad.org, citing a sefer called Minhage Kol Yaakov, who says, "We dress differently on Purim to minimize the embarrassment of the poor who go around collecting charity on this day, a day when we give charity to everyone who outstretches their hand." You can imagine if there's someone, let's say, in the community who's not doing so well, and they want to go around collecting on Purim, this is the perfect way to sort of remain anonymous, shall we say? So this can actually serve a very practical use on Purim in terms of protecting people from feeling embarrassed that they're collecting money on Purim. And especially when we're supposed to give to everybody, this wouldn't be an issue anymore. Now, there is one other connection that was developed by a number of people, and it's usually developed, again, in sort of a fragmented way. Well, we see this. Well, we see that. Well, we see this. Well, we see that. And that is that there are huge numbers of connections between dressing up and the story of Purim. And we'll see some of them now, and we'll see some of them actually at the end of the shir as well, with a slightly different focus and twist on it. The first source I want to start with is that this clash in the times of Purim is a clash between the Jews and
the Persians.
Which nation? Not the Persians necessarily, but Amalek. Right? We say Haman ben Hamedata Agagi, who comes from Amalek. And this is really the clash that is going on in the Megillah. Now, who does Amalek descend from?
Agag.
Agag, and before Agag, exactly, I hear it out there, Esav. Amalek really was an ancestor of Agag, right? Agag was the king of the nation of Amalek, and Amalek was a descendant of Esav. And let's look back to the beginning of the tension between Yaakov and Esav. What happens in that story in Sefer Bereishit? If we look at 27... 15 and 16, and I see I now forgot to, there we have it. I have both psukim here. Thank good. Batikach Rivkat Bigdei Esav Binah Agadol HaChamudot. What does Rivka do to Yaakov when she decides that it's right for him to be getting the blessing from his father? She takes Esav's clothing, Vatalbeshet Yaakov Binah Katan, and she puts them on Jacob, her younger son. So we're now having Yaakov dressing up as Esav. And in fact, she even goes further. Right? He had a very smooth body, he had smooth hands, he had a smooth neck. So Rivka takes, again, things that will make him hairier and places them on his body. This is the first dress-up in the story of Purim. Now, this is happening a long, long time before that. But guess what? That's really the core of the clash that we have on Purim, the Yaakov and Esav clash that continues then and began with really a dress-up to start the whole story off. So perhaps the dress-up is related to that. Now, it doesn't stop there. The Megillah is full of dress-up references, not necessarily the written part of the Megillah, but a lot of the Midrashim that we see make some reference to dressing back and forth between Jews, non-Jews, etc. The first one of these is, I'm going to quote you two Gemaras here from Megillah, both of which I believe are very well-known Midrashim. The Gemara tells us in source number 8, in Megillah 12a, that Behar Otoet Osher Kavod Malchuto Achashverosh at his party was showing off his wealth. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina says, Milamedis teaches us Shelavash Bigdei Kihuna, that Achashverosh wore the Bigdei Kihuna. He wore the Kohen Gadol's outfit. So you can imagine Achashverosh there, King Achashverosh, sitting there looking like the Kohen Gadol, having taken the clothing from the Beit HaMikdash. I mean, the general discussion of this is something that, again, we're going to leave alone now for the sake of time, having so much material to get through, but there's a lot more where that came from. The Gemara learns it from Lechavodol Tifaret and Yekar Tiferet Gedulato. And so to even another Gemara, slightly later, that Vashti refuses to appear at that very same party where Achashverosh is wearing the Big Day Kahuna. Why? Because Ba-Gavriel Va'asalazan of the second part of that source, you can turn the page and see the English, that Gavriel came and fashioned her a tail. I can imagine this would have been a popular costume choice, the Vashti with the tail costume. And I have addressed this in a couple of other shiurim again. I don't want to talk about all of these midrashim now and how to put them in perspective with Megillah, but the point is that we do see these two more cases in the Gemara and in the Midrash that talk about people that were changed to look in a new way. Ahasuerus, who actually dressed up, and Vashti, who grew a tail for the Purim story. And that's also, again, a dress-up that's associated with it. If we look in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, but this is also in various other midrashim, including in Chazal, and it's funny, I used this source once earlier with this translation for a shiur I gave about a month ago, and I thought I had accidentally mispasted it because it was missing a small chunk of the translation. Now that I, of course, once you print it, you only ever recognize this, but now I realize that piece of translation must never have been there because I copied it out again. It's a slightly different piece, and it's also missing a piece of translation. So there we have it. In source number 9, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer tells us about two more dress-up stories. The first dress-up story is after the grand showdown between Esther and Haman at the meal with Ahasuerus, at meal number 2. Esther points him out and says, "This evil man, this evil Haman," and the king storms out in anger. And he decides he's going to go take a walk in his orchard. So he walks out into the orchard and he sees there's some guy there chopping down his fruit trees. Says, "Hey, you, what are you doing there?" And the guy says, "Oh, no, it's just me." He says, "What do you mean, just you?" He says, "I'm allowed to be here." He says, "Who are you?" He says, "Oh, I'm Haman's son. Haman told me to come and chop down your trees." Because why? He needed wood. He needed to hang the Jews. Whatever it was. And says, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, this was actually one of the angels, it may have been many angels, but he says this was Malach Michael, the angel Michael, who was disguised as one of Haman's sons. And he was there simply to anger Ahasuerus. So we see now an angel has dressed up to join the party. And it doesn't stop there. We know also that right after that, when Ahasuerus finally comes in, and once the angels are done pushing Haman over onto the bed that Vashti is laying on, which again is another midrash that we see there, it says, "Vayomer Harvona echad min hasarisim lifnei hamelech." Harvona, one of the king's advisors, said to the king. Now what's very interesting is that Harvona here is spelled differently than when Harvona first appears in the first chapter of the Megillah. And Chazal darshan from that, and perhaps something else, they say, you know what? It wasn't really Harvona. Eliyahu Anavi knew it was Purim, so he said, "Great, I'm going to put on my Harvona costume." And Eliyahu Anavi came dressed up as Harvona and told the king that he should hang Haman. And this matter is just, again, another example of the repeated theme that we see of dressing up within the context of Purim, both from the very beginning of the tension between Yaakov and Esav, between the Jews and Amalek, all the way down through the entire Purim story. There's nothing but dressing up and dressing up and dressing up and dressing up. So if that's the case, we see so many malachim dressing up to do God's, you know, God's will, and we see all of these different stories, Ahasuerus dresses up, that's also a way that we can celebrate the day of Purim.
Well, yes? We see the dress up in Pshat too when he wants to wear the big day malchut.
So we're going to talk about that later. For one, as you're, you know what, I don't want no spoilers now. We will talk about that later because it may actually indicate something else than dressing up on Purim, as we'll see. The last source that people cite, although it's not so strong in Pshat, but it is sort of brought down, is that which we see in the Ralbag. Here, which is that it talks about once the Jews took over and once they were allowed to defend themselves, says V'rabim me'amei ha'aretz mityahadim. Many of the nations around them were converting. That's generally how we translate mityahadim. Mityahadim doesn't necessarily mean that, though, in the story of the Megillah. What it may mean, I remember seeing this, and I think it was the illustrated Megillah Esther, maybe from Gadi Palak or something. I'm trying to remember which version it was, where you see one of Haman's sons trying to put on tzitzis. Everybody's trying to disguise themselves, perhaps, in one interpretation, and that may be what the Rabbag is saying. He says, "Rotzel omar," what does it mean, mityahadim? Shehayu marim atzmam shehem yudim. They were showing, "Look, I'm Jewish, look, I'm Jewish." These people were disguising themselves, trying to be like Jews. And again, you can add into that the vinahapochu, turn it around, we're going to dress up like non-Jews, men are going to dress up like women, whatever the case may be. Yes.
Yes, it supports that argument, part of the dress-up theme, I agree. Mm-hmm. But you can also look at it as it's a technique for them to protect themselves, like Makar B'chorot, the Mitzri jumping into the Jewish houses because the Makot were 9 out of 9, and the 10th one they were afraid, and so...
Absolutely. Absolutely, that is part of the narrative. Yeah. No question about it. That doesn't mean, though, that we can't look at this and say that this seems to be a recurring theme that's happening again and again and again. So I thought that's something nice to highlight in the Megillah that we can talk about here in terms of just another reason to add to the arsenal of why we might dress up on Purim. However, there are some halachic concerns with the actual custom. And for this, we turn to a little bit of a more academic tint. Does anybody know what the word carnival means and where it comes from? So Google knows better than me and probably better than you as well, although I'm not doubting anybody's knowledge here. So a carnival was a period of public revelry at a regular time each year, typically during the week before Lent in Roman Catholic countries, involving processions, music, dancing, and the use of masquerade.
I think that's Mardi Gras as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, could be. Certainly, parading. Yeah, so that's sort of along the same lines. It may be exactly the same event, but the point is exactly, it's right before Lent. And where does the word carnival come from? Okay, mid-16th century, from Italian carnivale, I guess, from medieval Latin, from Latin caro, carn, meaning like carnivore. What's a carnivore? Someone who eats meat. And levare means to put away. Why? Because on Lent, they were putting away their meat. So right before, they had their carnival, their big party, where they would all dress up and get together. And let's read a little bit more that about that on Wikipedia. And I think it's starting to creep into all your minds where we're going with this. Carnival, see other spellings and names, is a Western Christian and Greek Orthodox festive season that occurs before the liturgical season of Lent. The main events typically occur during February or early March, during the period historically known as Shrovetide or Pre-Lent. Carnival typically involves public celebrations, including events such as parades, public street parties, and other entertainments, combining some elements of a circus. Elaborate costumes and masks allow people to set aside their everyday individuality and experience a heightened sense of social unity. Participants often indulge in excessive consumption of alcohol, shocker, meat, and other foods that will be foregone during upcoming Lent. And the article continues. There's a very long article on Wikipedia about this. But from an anthropological point of view, carnival is a reversal ritual in which social rules are reversed and norms about desired behavior are suspended. Winter was thought as the reign of the winter spirits. These needed to be driven out in order for the summer to return. Carnival can thus be regarded as a rite of passage from darkness to light, from winter to summer, a fertility celebration, the first spring festival of the new year. Several Germanic tribes celebrated the returning of the daylight. The winter would be driven out to make sure that fertility could return in spring. A central figure of this ritual was possibly the fertility goddess Nerthus. Also, there are some indications that the effigy of Nerthus or Freyr was placed on a ship with wheels and accompanied by a procession of people in animal disguise and men in women's clothes. So this is what we have going on in a lot of European countries right around the time of Purim. And many people have suggested that perhaps some elements of this were in fact taken by the Jewish communities that were around there. And this is a common sort of academic refrain as saying certainly the masquerading and the dressing up appears in halachic literature right around the times when this would have been at the peak of its popularity. And therefore, this is where the menorah came from. That's what people would do to have fun at the non-Jewish parties. So the Jews would do it at the Jewish parties to have fun too.
So do we know whether Purim celebrations in the Arab lands were different?
Yes. We have no mentions of similar minhagim from anywhere near that time. And in fact, normally, with a theory like this, we might not be so sure about it. We might not be so, you know, interested in accepting it, whether or not it may actually be true. This is a very unique case because you have poskim who point this out. And you have poskim who say, yes, this is the reason for it. And as a result, there's a bit of a problem. We're about to quote you the Tshuvot Maim Chaim, which is from Rav Misas, but also it's, you know, explained this way by Rav Mazuz and others, especially those from Sephardi lands. And here's the tshuva of Tshuvot Maim Chaim, or Chaim 1:298, where he goes through, someone basically wrote him a letter saying that people have started dressing up in his land that he lives, his Sephardi land, and this is around the 1900s that this is happening. And he says, I need to tell them how terrible this is. Can you please tell me what's wrong with dressing up and what's wrong with cross-dressing on Purim. And Rav Misas writes back, and we'll read the Hebrew just because it's nice to read in Hebrew. It's almost poetic. Sha'alta yididi b'michtavcha ha'na'im ki be'eretz migurecha nahagu harbe yotot b'furim levosh al p'nehem otam ha'partufim ha'partufin ha'yiduim v'nikra'im b'lashon arav maskarat. Okay, that sounds like some sort of masquerade. So there were people, he says, in these Arabic lands wearing these masks on Purim, yes?
So you're alluding to where this is coming from in gods of fertility. Why can't the Chachamim say this is Chukat Goyim and don't get involved?
Yes. Wait till the end of the tshuva. Wait till the end of the tshuva. And he says there are these people that are wearing these things. V'nafki mizeh kama kalkalot. Many terrible things are happening as a result of this. We're in source number 13, right at the first set of three dots, the first ellipsis. And you can, again, follow along in the English or the Hebrew. V'da, v'od, and furthermore, da yididi, no, my dear friend. Ki minhag zeh shelevishat ha-partufin nishtarbev michag ha-notzrim ha-nikra b'shem karneval. Know that this custom of wearing masks evolved from the Christian holiday called Carnival. And this is the funniest part of the tshuva by far coming up now. V'ani sha'alti l'kama anashim b'ki'im bilshonot ha'amim. And I asked many people, who I guess supposedly are experts in the languages of the nations, Pirush Carnival, what does the word Carnival mean? V'amruli, and they told me, shehi mila yevanit, it's a Greek word, atika, an old Greek word, v'rotzelomar, and what does it mean to say? Chag shel shtut. This is a foolish holiday, a holiday of folly. Now, I didn't see that anywhere in my searches, but I think the message is loud and clear here as to what's going on. And he said, "Ve'od hiftzarti b'hem lachkor al yisod min hagzeh me'ayin motza'o." And he says, I asked these people, can you please try to investigate and find out where did this come from? Like, why is it that the Christians have this carnival holiday? Okay, and where? What's the basis for it? What was it? An ancient holiday? V'achar ha'chipus b'sifrei divrei yimei ha'omot ha'kadmonim. And after looking through the history books of the ancient nations, matzu they found shehu mima'ayan nir pashu mekor mushchat. It's again from this terrible, gross, deformed, muddy source. Shel ha'yevanim v'haromim ha'atikim of the ancient Greeks and Romans. Ovdei avodah zarah, idol worshippers, hayu lovshin elu ha'partufim. They would wear these masks, b'yom edam, on the days of their holiday, which were to serve, okay, le'elil hayayin, the wine god, ul'elil hayofi v'hazima, and the god of beauty, of fertility, of promiscuity, really. And ve'osim bahem kol to'evah rachman al islam. And they would do everything terrible, everything evil. And you can read more about that on Wikipedia if you wish. I skipped out some of the other descriptions of what was taking place. Ve'im kein huvrar sheyesh bazeh shemetz avodah zarah. Therefore, he says, there is a stain of avodah zarah on actions like dressing up on Purim. Ve'isuro min ha-Torah. It is prohibited from by a Torah prohibition to dress up on Purim. Says the Tshuvot Maim Chaim. He says, you got to tell people to stop. And he goes on and on and on and writes how it's terrible and how no one could have ever allowed this. And he says, it's 100% Chukas Agoy, no question about it. It's even possibly Avodah Zarah. And it must be stopped at all costs. How's that for, turnaround? We're going from talking about how this is the central theme of Purim and how it's so wonderful and so beautiful and holy in the Megillah. And now we've gone all the way in the opposite direction to say it's an Isser de Oraisa to dress up. Now, for all that this may be a fairly compelling argument, which you may feel it that way, and thank you, I was going to say, v'nahapachu, you thought it was an Isser d'oraisa, no longer, now it's mutter. This is really not accepted by the mainstream at all. Certainly not by Ashkenazim, who hold this high and holy as a very important custom, but even by Sfardim. The Yalkut Yosef writes about this. And he says very clearly what, the general approach of Sfardim to the question. And this that people, again, have the custom. I see I didn't translate this, I apologize. Source number 14. Ein kol yisur bedavar. He says there's absolutely nothing wrong with wearing costumes and wearing masks. It's totally okay. This is coming again from Sfardi poskim. And he says, Ulam isur asur bi isur muchlat liish, lilbosh simlat isha, v'chein lo tilbash isha bigdei ish, kam biyom purim. But however, you shouldn't cross-dress in any form or fashion. That's completely prohibited. Stay far away from that. And there are a few ways that they sort of deal with this. The people that know and are aware of this suggestion that the Purim dress-up comes from Christian sources or even pagan sources respond in one of two ways. There's the usual, they took it from us, not we took it from them, which, again, I wasn't there, I can't say.
That's what I was kind of getting to. I asked about Arab lands, but do we have any sources that predate Christian Lent, pre-Lent stuff?
So what I was going to say is not necessarily about Purim, but we do have plenty of sources, these people point out, in various other areas, both geographically and even halachically, meaning not necessarily referring to Purim, where we see that dressing up was part of the fun. The Rambam, even, for example, who I can assure you is very far away from these lands and also predated a lot of the celebration that we're talking about, who writes about people cross-dressing at weddings and decries it. So clearly this was something that was happening. This is a way that people were merrymaking. So as we go back again to thinking of our first line here, right, as we said, the first reason, the first explanation is just fun. It helps add to the general atmosphere of the day. If that's something that we see clearly that people were doing before, and we do see that, it's certainly enough of a reason to say this is not Chukot HaGoy, this is not Avodah Zarah, and that it would be permitted to dress up on Purim. And this is really, again, a mainstream approach even within Sephardi circles. Certainly Ashkenazi circles, who again, as we said, hold this as a very high and holy minhag, that would be even a good thing to do and a mitzvah, and some of them were even willing to go so far as to say even the cross-dressing elements of it are okay. Now, just because we said that Ashkenazim and the Rama seem to be okay with a lot of this, it's not clear that that's actually unanimously accepted, especially in our day and age. And I figured I would look at a couple of different sources that note different issues with the sort of halachic questions that accompany dressing up on Purim, those relating to dressing up as a member of the other gender, and also those that relate to shatnez, and even some other things as well about damages that happened on Purim. We'll begin with the Mishnah Berurah in source number 15. He tells us in Orach Chaim 696:30, and 31 should not be there. I didn't keep it in the end. I ended up knocking it out. So he's talking about where the Rama said, back in our very first source, that the custom follows the first opinion to permit people doing these things on Purim, such as, again, wearing shatnez derabanan, or men dressing up as women and vice versa. He says, see Yoredeya 182, where the Taz wrote, and we're reading the English here, in source number 15, in the name of the Bach, that it is fitting to abolish this custom, whether on Purim or at a wedding. And so wrote the Be'er HaGola there. And if all of the clothing are male-styled, and only one is a woman's garment, meaning if a man is wearing entirely male clothing, but he has one garment that could be a woman's, who and is recognizable, meaning you can tell that it's a man, they're just wearing, you know, a woman's wig to be funny or something like that, it is possible that one should not protest to them. Okay, that's how far we've gone in the other direction. If it's only one thing, it's possible you shouldn't protest. Okay, we went from totally okay to, if it's only a minor issue, then maybe you shouldn't protest. So that's a pretty big turnaround, as we said. And he says, see the Knesset HaGdolah and Shelah, who warned people to distance themselves from behavior like this. And that's the Mishnah Berurah's take. One very important posik, of course, it's very, very recent. It's interesting, it's source number 16. The Or Letzion, which is really a Sephardi rabbi, or Ben Tzion Abba Shaul, actually cites the Rambam, which we just mentioned before, who prohibited cross-dressing during merrymaking for a bride and groom. He says, no one would think just because they're a bride and groom that you can, you know, transgress Torah law, that you can violate Torah law. So too, people would say, just because it's Purim, there's no way that you can transgress Torah law. That's just not allowed. Okay? The Aruch HaShulchan has actually a bit of a different take. The Aruch HaShulchan, for those of you who are familiar with him, is someone who's very strong in support of the local custom. Whatever the local custom was, he was going to defend it. And here's what he has to say on the topic in source number 17, as we move through our sources. U'mashenahagu b'yamim kadmonim b'ilvishat partzufim mishad nez, v'shel ish li'isha, achshav lo nahagu kein. He says that which they used to do, they used to wear shatnez in their masks, and they used to cross-dress on Purim, that's not our minhag now. V'chein mishayizik chayel l'shalem, and so too, if someone damaged someone else on Purim, which the Rama writes, they will be exempt. He says, if someone damages, no, chayav l'shalem, you will be obligated to pay. You'll be held liable for your actions. Now, in our great, due to our great sins, again, sort of simcha, happiness, joy, has set, it has darkened, and we no longer have true simcha. So we're not on this level where we can, you know, cross-dress for a holy sake anymore. He says, and that which the Rama wrote was simply to defend the practices that he saw going on around him. He wasn't saying that this is a good idea, and in fact, if you look in the Rama's background sefer that he wrote his mapa based off of, the Darkei Moshe, he writes that it's better to be machmir and not to do this stuff. And says the Aruch HaShulchan, it's simply because he was defending the practice of his people, but this is not something that people should be engaging in this day and age. Yes?
What's the difference between Shabbos to Rabbanon and Shabbos to
Rabbanon? So if you come to the Menchas Chinuch Shir this Shabbos, God willing, I hope to discuss it and tie it in, obviously, to a little bit of a Purim theme. It has to do, as usual, it's a big machlokas, it's a big dispute amongst the Rishonim. It has to do with how you understand the three words, Shua, Tavoy, and Nuz, which the word shatnez is comprised of according to the Gemara, and whether or not you need simply one of those ingredients to make it shatnez, or whether you need all three of those ingredients. Again, if you're around Shabbos morning after the Hashkama minyan here, you can hear more about that, I hope. Yes?
What did the Ramah say? That's to do with cross-dressing or with the
cross-dressing and shatnez and damage, yeah. Everything. Everything. He says, we're not on that level anymore. There may have been a level once upon a time where you could do that, but not us now. There's one other type of opposition to this, and that is the practical opposition. And that's found really in two short comments from different Mefarshim, one here and one elsewhere. The Ola Chabad here is one of the Achronim writes, V'chein nachon limchot bahem, it's appropriate to protest against people that are, again, doing these things which he feels are inappropriate. In terms of shadness, he's specifically referring. Ki ein medaktikim ben kilayim deoraita l'derabanan. Delav kulei al madina gemiri. Not everybody's so learned in these areas, so they think, I'm just wearing shadness deorabanan, but really it's shadness deoraita. So you have a practical concern that people don't know where to stop partying. And if you don't know where to stop partying, then he says you can have many, many averos that are happening, despite the fact that you may have been entering it with some sort of positive idea. That's not the way it will end. And the Taz says something that's extremely practical and very much borne out, actually, by what we see happening at the carnival, which is, ki yesh harbe michsholot chas v'shalom mizeh. There can be many, you know, stumbling blocks that come from this. Why? Chas v'shalom? Kishehochim biyachad b'li haker ish o isha. You've got men dressed like women dressed like men, people dressed like animals. A lot can happen when people are just all hanging around together and no one knows who's a man, who's a woman, who's taking, you know, advantage of who and under what circumstances. This is a very dangerous scenario to be in.
Plus alcohol.
Plus alcohol, exactly. Plus exorbitant amounts of alcohol. In both cases, you know, it's not necessarily a good idea. And this is more of a practical concern. Not to say that halachically it's inappropriate, because as we'll see, there may be some justification for it, but simply to say that it's not a good idea. Okay, so these are some of the different approaches. Some say it's outright prohibited. Some will say we're not on that level anymore. And others say that no, it's just not a practically good idea. And these are referring to the sort of outside practices that tend to accompany dressing up. Why? Because once people were dressing up, maybe they'd be wearing things with shatnez. Once people were dressing up, maybe they would be cross-dressing. Once people are dressing up, this can happen, that can happen, the next thing can happen. I will note, by the way, one of the reasons why people might have been wearing shatnez on Purim, if we're thinking about Purim costumes, is that two characters in the Megillah, one of which we already mentioned, one situation which we already mentioned, actually wear shatnez. The Big Day Kahuna, the Kohen's clothing, had shatnez in them, and we know that Achashverosh dressed up as in the Big Day Kahuna. And we also know that later on in the Megillah, actually, Mordechai goes out with a tachrich boots v'argaman. Boots we traditionally understand as linen, and argaman we understand to be dyed wool. And that's what Mordechai wrapped around himself. So that also was a case of shatnez, which is why people may have been wearing shatnez in first place on Purim. Just something to keep in perspective and in mind. But let's move on for now.
When did he wear these things?
When he went out.
Mordechai, when he had the king's clothing on.
But can't you say that this is how he was dressed to go out? He had to do that.
Absolutely. I'm not accusing Mordechai of wearing shanitz. There are various explanations as to what happened in that story. The simplest of which being, the king tells you to do something, you do it. I'm not disputing that, but the point is that simply we see why people might want to be wearing shatnez type clothing. Yes?
Is it shatnez if somebody wears two garments, one with wool and one with linen, or is it only if it's enmeshed in the same garment?
So it will be a difference between deraisa, derabanan, and something in between. Again, I would suggest that you either speak to me afterwards and I can point out some sources, or that you come on Shabbos morning to the Menchas Chinuch Shir where we'll discuss things like that. I hate to always be promoting this, but I guess it was just such a good time topic. So let's take a look at some of the defenses of these practices. Now that we've seen so many people in opposition to them, how would people defend, you know, cross-dressing on Purim? Isn't cross-dressing a pasuk in the Torah? Don't do it. Like, how can you possibly defend that? So first thing I would talk about would be shatnez. And I'm just going to note in advance, none of these are sources that say, it's Purim, it's okay. No one's saying that Purim is a special magical creature that makes all your averos go away. No matter how chassidish you get, Purim, Yom Kippurim. It's not that you can just get away with whatever you are doing wrong. There has to be some halachic background. And here's the halachic background in source number 20, from the Darkei Moshe HaKatzar, which is the sort of reasoning behind what the Rama writes in his Mapa on Shulchan Aruch. And he writes that basically, I would have thought it wasn't allowed, but I still see people doing this, and here's what I have to say. And what he suggests outside is as follows. He says there's a Mishnah on Kilayim, which is brought in the Gemara in Bava Kamma on 113a, that under certain circumstances, one can wear shatnez, I kid you not, to evade taxes. So there's the big note inside there. Note, this is in regards to the prohibition of shatnez. Does not relate to the general issues relating to tax evasion, okay? So no one go out and tell me that there's a mission that you can evade taxes. You know, there's a lot to talk about there as well. I don't know if we'll get to that on Shabbos. We already have a lot on our plate. But tax evasion is certainly a hot topic, I guess. So in terms of wearing shatnez, if you are wearing shatnez on your body in order to avoid, you know, having to schlep it along on your camel and pay duty on it, or bring it back from the States, the Mishnah seems to say that that's not a problem of shatnez. Why? Because it's not really wearing. You're not intending to wear them. You're simply having them on your body. You're transporting them on your body.
It's tax planning, not tax
evasion. I see. Yes. And the Rama even notes that there are a few commentaries that say, what does it mean you're wearing kilayim in order to evade taxes? It means you're actually dressed up in kilayim. He says there are even opinions there that say you are dressing up using these clothing, and the whole reason why you're dressing up is so you'll look like a non-Jew and you won't be taxed like the Jews, which is what was going on there. He says, certainly we see on Purim, to wear kilayim as a costume is not a problem. So therefore, with rabbinic kilayim, with rabbinic shatnez, he was willing to be lenient. Okay, and he says that seems to be the reason for this custom, and that's his defense of that custom. Again, there are people that would disagree and say, in that case, it's not allowed, and you can't compare case to case, and there are all other things, but this is the reason as to why he would consider this a possibility of being allowed. So too, when it comes to cross-dressing, there are a couple of sources that try to defend as to why people might allow this on Purim. Just to take a look in general at the prohibition of cross-dressing, the Torah tells us that you can't cross-dress. We don't know why. The assumption is that it's because of something illicit. It's because of, again, inappropriate behavior between the sexes. And when you look at Shulchan Aruch in Yerodea, the first comment that he makes on the halachos of cross-dressing and lo yilbash and velo yechli gevra alisha, etc., are actually in regards to shaving. Shaving certain parts of the body are prohibited. And if you look smack in the middle, he tells us, right? Bamed Varma Morim, it's the Hebrew 3/4 of the end of the first line of source 21, or 1.5 lines down in the English, about what were these words said. Bamed Varma Morim, when were these words said? Bimakom she'ein ma'avirino to'el anashim. It's only in a place, where is it prohibited, let's say, to shave one's armpits? Only in a place where only women shave their armpits. But if in that place, right, men shave their armpits too, then it's completely permitted, as we see, in a place where men too do so. However, if he does so, they do not beat him. Okay, they don't beat him. And says the Rama, va'afilu lechatchila shari. You can go and do that from the beginning. You don't have to worry about this prohibition at all. It's all dependent on what people in the community around you are doing. So if you're somewhere where they say it's totally fine to shave this and that, then men can shave this and that, despite the fact that that was the classic example of what was prohibited. Nevertheless, it all depends on the standards of the community that you're in. And if that's the case, you can see how this would extend fairly easily to Purim. On Purim, we know that men are allowed to wear women's clothing. They're not women's clothing anymore on Purim because everybody in the community is fine with that. The Taz also points out in Source 22, as we've got only a few minutes left, that it's possible it's only if you're doing it in order to beautify yourself in some way that you're wearing the clothing for that purpose, to make yourself look better, that it would be prohibited. But if it's just, again, in some sort of other garment, I'm going to just wait a couple of minutes till the end to take your questions, if that's okay, from here in. He says that, number one, the Bach suggests that in that case, if you're just doing it, you know, to protect yourself from the rain, and you're wearing the clothing, but it's not an attempt to beautify yourself, that would be permitted. In fact, he says he brings a proof from the permission to use mirrors. Again, originally, mirrors were something that only women were allowed to use in terms of the communal standards, and later on, we see that becoming okay, and also that it's permitted where you need to cut your own hair. Even in those days where using mirrors was prohibited for men, if they were giving themselves a haircut, they would have to look in the mirror to make sure, you know, they're not hurting themselves or cutting their hair too short, if they have any hair. Right? And it's fine. That was something that was okay. And he even notes that the Rama brings this, but suggests that there's another opinion out there which says that this is prohibited, and that should be followed if possible. Just a couple more things in our last few minutes. Source number 23 talks about whether or not it's better for young children to be doing this. If, you know, if we're not going to allow it for adults, will we allow it for children or not? Differing opinions on that. You can take a look at that yourselves. In source number 24, I quote one other comment of the Rama, which I think gets a little bit overlooked. Says the Rama, in source number 24, in Aruch Chaim 695.2, just before what we quoted to open the shir, Yesh nahagu lilbosh bigdei Shabbat v'yom tov v'furim v'chei nachon. There are those who have the custom to dress in Shabbat and Yom Tov clothes on Purim, and that is correct. So, Rama, on the one hand, we say people have the custom to wear costumes. Rama also goes on record, quoting the Maharil, saying the appropriate thing to do is to wear nice Shabbos clothes. And what might the source be for that? And I saw a very beautiful explanation of this from a number of the Mefarshim, which I quote in source 26, from Rav Chaim Palagi, which is cited by a number of other people and also said by other people of their own accord who didn't have it. But we look and we see two characters in the Megillah who come out beautifully dressed. The first one is not Achashverosh. Achashverosh is obviously wearing his kingly clothing. But it says that Esther came out, Vatilbash Esther Malchut. She dressed herself with the kingly clothing, very beautiful clothing, Vatamor Bachatzar Beit HaMelech HaPnimi, and exactly she approaches Achashverosh in that whole sticking out the scepter story, and she gets accepted by him. So we see it talks about how she wore very beautiful clothing, and we also see in 8.15, 5.1, I didn't quote for you, but I have 8.15 here in source number 25, and Mordechai Yatzah Milifnei HaMelech. Mordechai went forth from the presence of the king in royal apparel, blue and white, great crown of gold, and with a rob of fine linen. That was, again, I keep the translations as they are. So, a rob of fine linen, I think that means robe. And the city of Shushan shouted and was glad, and this was sort of a celebration of Purim. And perhaps those sources are not to tell us that it's right to dress up, but those sources in the Megillah may be saying how we should dress in, again, sort of very respectable clothing, in our Shabbos clothes, in our Yom Tov clothing, just as these two leaders did in the Megillah. And that's something to think about. And as he writes in Moed Lechol Chai, as Rav Chaim Palagi writes, and again, many others as well, and one should wear his festive clothing like Maharil writes, and they should be worn starting from the night of Purim, and not like those who are accustomed to first wear their festive clothing on Purim morning. For if wearing such finery is in order to remember the miraculous accounts of, and Esther put on her royal clothes, and Mordechai left the king's presence, dressed in royal attire, how can one read these verses from the Megillah while dressed in their weekday clothing? And so, I do have a personal story to share, actually, about dressing up, which is, I was once in a Haredi neighborhood with my Rebbe. I was in Har Nof. My Rebbe, Rabbi Shurkin, was hosting me for Purim, and I was dressed in scrubs, actually. That's what I decided to dress up as that year. And I went in with him to Mincha, and everybody was dressed in Bigdei Shabbos like me. I stuck out like a very sore thumb. You can imagine the scrubs among a large group of hats and jackets. And what happened was the person who went up to daven decided to step down. It was before Mincha, Maybe they had too much to drink already. I don't know. They decided to step down before Chazaras HaShatz. And I daven a fairly quick Shemona Esrei. Rabbi Shurkin davens a fairly quick Shemona Esrei. And he pokes me. He says, get up there. Go daven. You know, it's taking a while. No one's stepping up. You go daven. I said, Rebbe, me, you know, I'm sitting here in scrubs and everybody else has their hats and jackets. And you know, I don't know if people would appreciate that. Said, that's the uniform today. So anyways, we see that both in terms of Big Day Shabbos, that's one uniform for reading the Megillah and hearing about Mordechai and Esther, but there's also another uniform. There's the uniform of dressing up where you have all these other sort of backstory to the Megillah where that is something impressive and that is something important, really, both from a macro look at things and all of the reasons we discussed of Vinahapachu and Haster Astir Panai, but also in terms of the details in the Megillah. And that on Purim, there is this, you know, inyan, there is an idea that one should be wearing Shabbos clothes. There's also, you know, not to forget that wearing costumes, for certainly for Ashkenaz people, is part of a longer tradition that goes back and can help us rejoice on Purim. Just, and with that, we're free to go. I have short rulings from Rick Karabkin on this, just a couple of points. There's no worry about the non-Jewish customs, according to his psak. People should not cross-dress on Purim. Costumes should be checked to make sure there's no known shatnez. Don't think just because there are some people that permit shatnez of a certain level on Purim that you don't need to necessarily pay any attention to the shatnez. But Rabbi Karabkin paskins that if there's, you know, an assumption, if you've checked at the store and they say, yeah, we don't know that this particularly contains wool linen, we've sold it to many Jews before and none of them have come back screaming at us with an empty package or you don't accept returns, or things like that, you can actually wear it based on that chazaka. And just to note that also four-cornered garments are not exempt from tzitzis on Purim, but overall I think that this is sort of a good look at the halachot and the background of the minhag of getting dressed up on Purim in all sorts of different clothing. Thank you very much for coming out tonight.